I'm in a COVID-19 clinical trial for one of the vaccines. And when I go, I have to fill out a diary and other documents. Those are called source documents, and those source documents have to be reviewed and verified. I'm Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting. We'll be talking about source document review and verification with two experts, Audra Holloman, who is a VP of Clinical Monitoring, and Nicole Stansberry, a VP of Global Central Monitoring here at Syneos Health. Source document review and verification next on the Syneos Health Podcast. Audra Holloman, Nicole Stansberry, welcome to the Syneos Health Podcast.
Hi there.
Thank you.
So we're talking about source document review and verification. And I know that those are all words in English, but I have no idea what those words together mean. It's just not part of my field at all. What the heck is a source document? Why do you need to review them and verify them?
I can start and Audra can elaborate. Source documents are the medical records, the results of laboratory analyses, the results of different tests and assessments and procedures that are performed as part of the documentation of the data collected in a clinical trial. The monitoring responsibility is to review those source documents and make sure that they meet protocol compliance, that they show that the medical investigator and the patients were complying with the protocol and the schedule of events set forth in the trial. We're also making sure that those records are accurate, that they make sense, that they don't have information that is maybe some typos or miscommunication. For example, if we saw a blood pressure measurement that was 12 over 84 in an adult patient, we might say, wow, that doesn't make sense. They might have recorded the information incorrectly. So we're looking for accuracy in that source document. We're looking for making sure that it's legible, that it's contemporaneous, that we can tell that it was recorded at the time the procedure actually took place, that it is attributable. We know who recorded that information, and so on and so forth. So we're looking at ALCOA principles. That's the abbreviation for the things like accurate, legible, contemporaneous, original, etc. So we're looking for that. And then once we've verified all of that information, then we do the verification part, which is sometimes called SDV. And that's confirming that all of the information collected in the medical record or the source documents for the clinical trial got captured appropriately into the electronic data capture system, which is the system that's used to actually analyze the data. So the verification part is really a transcription check to make sure that we are accurately telling the story, portraying the story of what happened to the patient in the trial from the source into the EDC system.
So I was in the Pfizer clinical trial actually for the vaccine for COVID, and there were maybe 40 pages of paperwork that I had to sign going into it and then another time at a different visit. Is that what we're talking about? Plus whatever lab results I wouldn't have seen or signed?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff. So you probably signed an informed consent, consenting your participation to the trial. That's part of the source of what our CRAs would evaluate to make sure that the patients participating provided their consent. And then anything after that consent is part of the source data. That's the evidence of participation and the data collected for the patient participating.
Okay. It seems straightforward, to be honest. What's the big deal about source document verification and source document review?
I think it comes from so many multiple sources these days. We talked about the paper, but as you mentioned, or Nicole mentioned, it's the lab data. It may be diary information. A lot of our clinical trials now have electronic diaries, iPhone applications, any source of data if we're performing an assessment using equipment. It's also part of the site or the doctor's their own assessments and their own notes. So it comes from a lot of different sources to be that comprehensive source. It's our responsibility as the monitors and as we perform the monitoring responsibilities as a CRO to ensure that we have access to that and that we found the evidence that's appropriate and that the patient treatment was appropriate according to our regulations, the site's ethics requirements, and the protocol.
The challenge that we've been facing as an industry is that historically, from a monitoring perspective, we were required to review 100% of all of that evidence for every patient, every visit in the clinical trial, and make sure that every single notation was appropriately reflected in the case report form. And with the advent of risk-based monitoring and new monitoring methods such as central monitoring using data analytics and visualizations, we can move towards a reduction in that SDR and SDV assessment, and we can start looking at the data in different analytical tools and then pointing the CRAs to specific subjects or subject visits or procedures to actually perform that review and verification on, not making them rely on 100% of that review in the field, which is a very manual and time-consuming process.
We've just mentioned, I think, four different abbreviations in a very short time frame. One of them we talked about earlier, that was the SDV, or the source document verification. And then I think we know what SDR is since we're talking about source document review. Audra, you also mentioned a CRO. We're part of a contract research organization. We monitor clinical trials on behalf of clients. And then you, Nicole, mentioned a CRA. That's one I don't know that everybody knows. What is a CRA?
A CRA is a clinical research associate. We sometimes call them monitors.
So that's the context of this, is that both of you work for and do monitoring of clinical trials as part of your role.
That's right. I'm responsible for the central monitoring team members that use the analytical dashboards and provide those insights to the CRAs, who are more of the field-based on-site at the investigational site with the principal investigator, and provide those insights to the teams from our central monitoring reviews.
That's right. And then my role is overseeing those CRAs, the clinical research associates, who are the travelers, who are the individuals that are there on site, building relationship with the investigators and their coordinator staff, and reviewing their process and compliance to the protocol and their regulatory and ethics requirements.
So I could understand why the job's important. We don't get passed in clinical trials if we don't prove that we've actually done the work that we said we were going to do. What makes the job interesting?
Well, I think one of the things that makes the job much more interesting today than it was historically is that from a central monitoring perspective, we can use analytical tools that allow us to see trends and issues and outliers in data that when we were just going out in the field and doing that transcription check and reviewing charts, it doesn't allow you to see trends. You're just sort of in the weeds, if you will, and not able to take a step back and see trends. And what makes this really interesting now is that we can have a really close collaboration with the central monitor and the CRA, where the central monitor can take a look at that data first, identify trends and issues, and then pinpoint that CRA to specifically follow up on investigating very specific items. It saves them a lot of time, but it actually gets them to a point where they're hitting the things that are important, that are critical, that can have an impact on patient safety or the overall integrity of the data collected in a trial.
That's right, Nicole. And I would just add, I think it makes the CRA's job more exciting and more fulfilling because they truly are focused on the value activities and the priority activities when they're working with the site. And I like to equate it to playing a detective, really focusing in on the comprehensive picture of what's happening at the site. And it's not only related to patient data, but it's site process and all of the things that require compliance so that site is performing and showing evidence of that performance and compliance. It allows them to manage their time with the site in a different way, to really focus on those value-added things where we're being compliant from a regulatory and a safety and a quality point of view, and we're also building relationship with the site and understanding and helping them manage through hurdles that they have, perhaps related to patient enrollment and treatment.
Are either the CRAs or central monitoring unblinded? Do they know who is having drug and who is not having drug?
Both are blinded, but the CRAs can sometimes serve in an unblinded role if they're doing, for example, drug accountability or things like that. But typically, both the central monitors and the CRAs remain in a blinded capacity as we're looking at the data.
That's correct. And if there is an unblinded drug management component, that would be a separate team to maintain those firewalls and barriers between the blinded and unblinded individuals.
I guess I understand for the statistical side, you really need to keep blinding. If you break blinding, then the statistics blow up and you don't really know what you have. There's also a risk, a security risk, right? If somebody has an early insight into whether or not the trial passed or failed, that can be a risk for insider trading or whatever else.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Where do we go from here? So we're doing source document review. We're doing source document verification. They're now centralized and come from a variety of different sources. You mentioned iPhones, et cetera. In my clinical trial, I have a diary that I use on my iPhone to say whether or not I am experiencing COVID symptoms and whether or not I need to get tested. Where does source document review and source document verification go in the future? Where are we seeing that?
That's a great question, Jeff. And I'll give you an example specific to the example that you provided with your diary about COVID symptoms. So let's say, for example, you're completing your diary every day. What we can do from a central monitoring perspective is we can look at that data every day as it's coming in from you. And if we see a signal in your data that indicates you are starting to develop some COVID symptoms, but we have not yet seen the investigator in your clinical trial bring you in for that follow-up visit, I, as the central monitor, can alert Audra and her CRA team to say, hey, we think there's a patient at this site that is experiencing symptoms, but has not yet come in to perform the follow-up activities needed. Audra's team can then take that information, go contact the site and get you in and still have that review and meet the timelines in the trial. For example, the study may say that we need to get you in within 3 days of you developing symptoms. Well, if I see it today, I can alert Audra. Audra can alert the site and remind the site that they need to get you in quickly so that we keep the integrity of the trial running smoothly. And we don't extend those timelines. We don't miss the opportunity to collect important information on you as part of a participant in the trial. Those are some of the things that we're able to do to keep that integrity of the trial much more intact, to help the sites maintain compliance, to alert Audra and her team so that they're not having to call the site every day and ask the sites questions about their patients and their participation. So really be able to focus in on those activities.
And Nicole, what I think is even greater is that's a great patient example, but as we take it up a level and look across sites and across patients, how the central monitoring team can really see that data in aggregate faster to identify trends and issues early. An example may be multiple patient diary entries that could be a patient misunderstanding, a patient training issue that can be caught early, and we can redirect and help sites in correcting those issues early to avoid deviations or lost data.
As we've talked through this, there are a lot of things in pharma that are nice to haves and some things that are requirements. You must have them. Is SDR and SDV, source document review, source document verification, is that a nice to have or is that just a must have? You must have this and everybody has it.
I don't think it's a requirement, and certainly there is not an expectation by regulators of how much of that we perform. What we're required to do is to protect patient safety, their rights, their welfare, and the overall integrity of the data in the trial and compliance. So how we go about doing that is really up to us. What we are required to do is follow whatever plan we put in place. So if we said we're going to look at 10% of the patients and sample their SDR and SDV on 10% of the patients, and we're going to have central monitoring running in the background, alerting the monitoring team of additional follow-up, then we just need to be able to show that we have performed those activities. If you look at how that's changing, in the past, probably for the last 30 years, we were looking at making sure that there was a little flag checked in the EDC system, the electronic data capture system, that showed that a CRA actually looked at every single piece of data collected in the trial. And we would just go through, the CRA would check the boxes, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of boxes, to indicate that they performed the review. And what we're starting to do now is say, you know what, that check mark that we perform the review is not as important as measuring how many queries were generated off of the review that we performed. How many times did the data in the database actually change after we queried that data and asked a question of the site? That is a better indicator of data quality. The industry has never required a certain amount of SDR and SDV be performed. I think we've always reverted to 100% because we didn't have these technological solutions and other things like central monitoring and analytics dashboards to help us pinpoint what we should look at. So we just looked at everything. Now we're able to really pinpoint that, and we're able to start reducing some of what that focus is in the site for the CRAs so that they can focus on the things that are critical and allow us to be a lot more efficient in how we operationalize monitoring. And to Audra's point, it allows them to focus more on overall process and process improvements with the site, not just searching through a bunch of data looking for anomalies in a more manual way.
Yeah, when we think about quality and we think about what we do to assess quality internally and at a site, we really look at how we audit and evaluate findings in an audit or a mock inspection type of scenario. I know Nicole and I have shared this in the past. The types of findings that we see are rarely related to that SDV or SDR entry errors or missed data points that really have gravity to patient safety or data integrity. Where we have challenges are in process, how a PI is providing appropriate oversight of his staff. Is the clinical staff at an investigator site qualified to perform the assessments they've been delegated? Are they complying with their institutional processes? All of those things are where we want our CRAs to spend time, because that's where we see the true effort to stand up a site and support them to have a quality participation in clinical trials.
So I understand we don't need to check every single box for every single data point. How do we monitor source document review, source document verification centrally?
That's a great question. So one of the things that we'll do is we'll look at compliance with our monitoring strategy. For example, you might have in your monitoring strategy that the central monitors are going to look at all the data for all the patients, and they're going to focus on protocol compliance on these key areas. They might focus on patient safety in these key areas. And then from a CRA perspective, the plan might include doing SDR and SDV on your screening visit, your baseline visit, and maybe week 12. So maybe the CRAs don't even need to look at 7 of the other visits. They're focused on 3 critical visits that they're going to perform SDR and SDV on for every patient. So that's just one example. So you would measure compliance, that the central monitors did their review, that the CRAs did their required review, and then you'll also assess whether or not the central monitors had findings that were generated either for the sites as queries in EDC or findings for CRAs to follow up on. And so you want to make sure that your team is closing out those findings, performing those investigations to assess the data and the compliance of that data. And then overall, instead of tracking whatever percent SDR and SDV has been performed on the study, now in newer RBM models.
Wait. RBM?
I did another acronym, risk-based monitoring.
Thank you.
That's where we're selecting certain things, not everything, to look at. So we're assessing the risks in the study and making selections like, okay, we'll have the CRAs just look at the screening visit, the baseline visit in week 12, for example. That's a risk-based monitoring approach. But when we use these kinds of approaches, we start to ignore some of the historical metrics like what percent SDR and SDV we've performed, because we don't have a target. We're no longer looking for that number to be 100%. We want to make sure that all the findings that are generated have been closed out. We want to look at what has been reviewed and what our query rate is and what our data change rate is. That starts to give us a lot more insight into the quality of the data, not how much SDR or SDV has been performed, and certainly not how far away from 100% we are. That kind of metric becomes irrelevant in this newer risk-based monitoring model.
Then I think the other measures are the evidence of quality, how quickly we are helping sites and closing those action items. And to Nicole's point, the evidence of compliance. So just like we've said with source documents, that's the evidence of what happened with the patient and the source at the site of what did the site do in managing the patient. We're the next piece where we're demonstrating evidence of our monitoring oversight in review of the information that the central monitors provide. Maybe it doesn't require an action, but we still have to document and evidence that we went through that decision and that event evaluation to say, okay, yes, I see this assessment. I'll discuss it with the site when I return in 2 weeks. Or I see this assessment and it requires me to call them immediately. So it's all about showing that evidence of critical thinking and site management.
A final question, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to. What's the worst horror story you've heard or come across in terms of data management and clinical trials that you might have uncovered?
I can think of one off the top of my head. It's very similar to the diary compliance issue that we talked about. I've been involved in an epilepsy study where the sites were supposed to be titrating patients off of their existing epilepsy medication, very slow titration off before they begin the trial. And one of the things that we noticed was we were having some patients have pretty severe seizures in between screening and taking their first dose of study medication. And we were able to pick up in central monitoring pretty quickly the reason why that was happening. We were able to see that at a few sites, they were not doing that nice, slow titration and taper from the previous medication like they were supposed to. And it was causing patients to have seizures in the trial. And so we were able to very quickly hone in on which sites were contributing to that problem and have the CRAs retrain those investigators to make sure that they were appropriately titrating and tapering to prevent those breakthrough seizures from occurring.
Wow. And you said you had one, Audra?
Yeah, I think Nicole's is a great example of how central monitoring can find things quickly. My example is on a trial that did not have central monitoring and the challenges that we had to get to the root cause of what was happening. And it's a similar story with patient diary data that was collected in an electronic device. And the way that the monitoring platform on their website was set up, the CRAs could navigate to review patient by patient certain data points, but did not have a way to really aggregate the data view at a site or study level. And it was only until the very close to database lock when the sponsor statisticians started looking at the data, were they finding a lot of similarities at a couple of sites that were linked in entry times and actual value times. And this was an overactive bladder trial. So they were recording the number of times that the patient would need to go to the bathroom every day. And so once that we really started to investigate, we actually found that it was a location where the coordinators were entering data on behalf of the patients when they presented to the clinic, and therefore all the entry times were similar, and it did call into question if the data was valid. So That's something we could have seen very quickly in a central monitoring approach with the tools and systems to review centrally, and we didn't. Finally, they were able to validate that it was true patient data. It was in all intent, the coordinators trying to help a population that were having trouble with the diaries, but that was not coming forward in the monitoring, and we weren't able to see that.
Well, Audra Holloman, Nicole Stansbury, thanks so much for joining me in the Cineo South podcast.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for having us.
That's all for today's episode of the Cineo's Health podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Stewart from Cineo's Health Consulting. If you want to talk through a hard decision you're making at your life sciences company, you may email me at podcast@cineoshealth.com. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For access to more future-focused, actionable life sciences insights, visit the Cineo's Health Insights Hub at insightshub.health. Cineo's Health, shortening the distance from lab to life.